Hi, I'm Jennifer Vine, President and CEO of the Education Foundation of Sarasota County and your host for Education Conversations, a podcast where guests share innovative and relevant thoughts, research, and ideas on education today and explore ways to help prepare students to thrive. Welcome to this bonus episode, Education Conversations, Our Why. Today, I want to share with you a little bit about who we are, and more importantly, I want to share our why. I know many of you have probably been familiar with Simon Sinek, as he became quite famous back in 2009 when he launched a book, Starting with Why. And I know for myself, I was quite inspired when I listened to his TED Talk that was titled, How Great Leaders Inspire Everyone to Take Action. He has provoked many of us to think about our why, and that has certainly had a major impact on me back then and even today. It impacted me so much that I thought, you know, that might be kind of fun to just do a little bonus episode here on listening and learning more about the Education Foundation of Sarasota County's why. So for this particular episode, I thought we might switch it up a little bit and turn it over to Lisa Moody to interview me. Lisa is the president and CEO of Stream Digital, and she's going to ask me some questions about the Education Foundation's why and what inspires our work to prepare each and every student for life. Lisa is an award-winning executive producer and writer for TV and digital, and so she's going to intimidate me, I'm quite sure. But in addition to leading her own company, she has served as the Director of Marketing and Digital Strategies at Ringling College of Art and Design, a local art institute here in Sarasota that certainly has a national presence and reputation. I've known Lisa for many years, and I'm so happy she could sit down and talk with us today, talk with me particularly. And Lisa actually helped us get our podcast up and running. So Lisa, thank you so much for joining me today for this very important conversation.
Well, thank you, Jennifer, for inviting me here to co-host this episode. I'm really happy to be here. I'd like to start at the very beginning. When did the Education Foundation start and why?
Oh, that's a great question, and something that certainly always brings me back to some very humble reflections, because this was actually started, the Education Foundation started locally with citizen advocates. That's basically just a group of very dedicated community volunteers, many of whom are still active in our community today. And that was 35 years ago. They came around and said they really want to make sure that they put the students, the schools, the public schools, and the teachers kind of front and center to making sure that if we have a vibrant community, we absolutely need to have a strong schools and strong students and teachers. And so they rallied around and put just their heart and soul into this work. And, you know, we're here today, 35 years later, kind of standing on the shoulders of giants. I really just tip my hat to many of them. Shirley Ritchie is what we kind of note as our founder. We've got Dan Bailey, Jim Tollerton, Jim Henry. I mean, the list just goes on and on and on. So they have left an indelible imprint and certainly brought us to where we are today.
So I know that you're not actually connected to the school district here. Do you think that it was important to have that third party presence in the community here?
Yeah, you know, it's so interesting. Even now, so we're in 2023, and our board of directors has really started to make sure that we're even more intentional now today than ever before in demonstrating our independence. I think probably a lot of that is tied because of just making sure that there is a partner that's supporting the work but is not beholden to any of the governmental kind of limitations, if you will. But that actually, that independence didn't start with us. It started years ago back with those founders when they started the Education Foundation then, because they even also recognized how important it was to have a valued, trusted partner helping to kind of accelerate and move and support and amplify the work of public education, but to demonstrate that that was done willfully and voluntarily and joyfully by a group completely separate from anything that's tied from a compliance standpoint. And so I think that spirit of independence has stayed with us and has carried us forward to this day.
Let me ask you this on that point. In 2016, it's fair to say that the Education Foundation pivoted. Can you discuss how its focus shifted and why that was?
So that was an interesting time for us because, quite honestly, that was back when there was a lot of emerging conversations about preparing students for life. And it was really known back then, and it's used even still to this day, but college career readiness. All of that was just starting to make some inklings. And at the same time, we also recognize that for 35 years, we have been doing some of the strongest work in supporting students and teachers, mainly through funding support that went, you know, to the teachers through classroom grants and things of that sort, which continue on to this day and are incredibly important. I just want to mention as a side note, not to go down a bunny trail, but we want to do everything possible to help teachers not have to reach into their back pocket for any reason. And so those classroom grants are certainly a paramount important endeavor that we do. All that being said, in 2016, we really kind of looked forward and said, if we're student-centered and we're really trying to make sure that students are emerging from high school graduation and moving into the community to be thriving adults, are they getting everything that they need? Are they really prepared for life? And I know that kind of sounds a little esoteric, but at the same time, you hear people throughout the community, whether it's employers who are trying to hire staff, do they have the critical thinking skills? Do they show up for work? Do they know how to interview properly? What about budgeting and personal finance? Do they know how to balance their own, you know, checkbook? There's all these different components that came out that we just felt, gosh, the schools are so responsible already for, it's a daunting task for what teachers and educators have to do in 180 days, you know, each year to progress students from K through 12 so they matriculate from graduation. And yet there was a huge missing link. There was a disconnect in trying to make sure that some of the non-academic pieces were still being provided to these students. And so that's really what kind of pushed us into doing this work. That opened up a whole new area for us as we started to provide direct student programming. And then that is really what, as soon as we began, it illuminated how great the need was. And so that's what's continued on to this day.
So then just to clarify, so at that point, you still continued to provide the grants for teachers, but you also provided additional resources?
That's exactly right. It really said we needed to become a more multifaceted education foundation that was providing different levels of service and supports so that we are looking at all of the components, whether it's helping to ensure teachers have what they need and amplifying them from something as simple as a recognition program like Teacher of the Year, and also helping to make sure the students have the supports and the resources that they need. So when we made that decision, we also knew we were going into a larger terrain of higher responsibility, and it would require a stronger effort of organization and complexity. But at the end of the day, if you really care about kids and you want to see them be successful, wouldn't you do whatever it takes? And so for us, it was, while it was a difficult proposition, knowing that what was ahead of us, it was an easy decision for us to make.
So I'm going to go down my own bunny trail now. Not that I haven't already. But, right. So we're sitting here at your facility called Launchpad for You.
Right.
Would this be an example of one of the things that you offer for students that, you know, help them to thrive? Or what do you do in this building with students?
Great question. So we're sitting in this location, Launchpad for You. It's a community resource center. It was opened in the Rosemary District, and we actually opened it in COVID. And I always feel like you have to go like, da-da-da, COVID, you know, everything happened. But it was interesting because, again, we had opened Student Success Centers. We were privately managing Student Success Centers in several of the area high schools. We have our own qualified advisors and coaches that are giving personal guidance and support, helping students make their plans and prepare for which pathway they want to go to after they graduated from high school. Right. And then when the schools closed, all of that went away. And yet the need didn't go away. Mm-hmm. The need actually became greater. And so we had to look at how do we still provide solutions outside of that. So that's where the innovation, that's where the imagination, that's where you're still kind of, you got to press on the pedal
when you see that the need is great and you got to be so darn determined to overcome whatever barriers are necessary. So we did that. And so we opened this community resource center where we not only provided something as simple as Wi-Fi access for kids, many kids who didn't have it. We did that through a partnership with Comcast, which was outstanding. And I know they do it in other places as well, but that was we wanted to make sure we availed that. We also had launched a mentoring program, and we wanted to make sure that the students and the mentors had a place that they could meet one-on-one to talk and could converse and still work through the struggles that they were going through. Certainly we maintained, you know, safe distance and followed all the CDC protocols and everything, but there that none of that went away. And that's the thing, is that so the work still had to continue. And so then providing the opportunity for students to come in and to get personal advising and support when many of their plans just all of a sudden just went boom out the window. We wanted to make sure we were there. And then of course we also adapted and went right online offering virtual appointments as well. Many of whom, you know, did that as well, but I felt like we were very quick and very responsive and very agile in making sure we had those deliverables as soon as possible. And I can't underscore also just, we can't do this work without the support of so many of our partners and donors.
Yeah, definitely. 2016 was probably around the time that you and I met. And I think you were just starting then, if I'm not mistaken. Was it like 2015?
Yeah, 2015 started? I started here. Yep, okay. Yep.
So was it coincidence that the pivot point kind of
was
know,
you?
Coincided?
Yeah,
right, it was me. Oh, you're funny. Was you?
No. Well, no. I think the board was ready. The conditions were ready. We were assembling a good team. The donors were ready. I mean,
and the students really changed in the mid 2000s.
Yes,
you know.
Yes. So I think the timing. All you know. Some people would say the perfect storm, but it was to me. It was the perfect opportunity for us to do that, and the necessity to do that was so vitally important. You know, I started my work in education actually in the independent school sector, and then I moved into the public school sector. And it's so interesting because I have that perspective of multi-educational environments, and certainly I'm an advocate that you have to find the right fit for your child, and only you certainly can, you know what's best for your child. But you often see kind of the grass is greener on the other side mentality. But one of the upsides that I did learn from the independent school setting was just the small curated connections and support that they would give to students that was unlike what you would typically see in a mass environment. I'll just draw an analogy of, you know, like a college counselor at an independent school setting may have a portfolio of maybe 50 students. And yet in the public high school arena, certainly in Florida, you're looking at a portfolio of over 400
Wow.
students. So for us, I think, or at least for me, what I learned during that time was it is so important that students are known, they are understood, they are loved, they are supported, they are encouraged, and you've got to be able to know them individually. And I think all of that was just something that just helped to accelerate because of the conditions that were there in 2016. And so, yeah, it's been a joyous and certainly arduous task for sure.
Well, and like we just said, you know, so much has changed these past few years in education, and I taught as well. And mm-hmm. I saw a huge evolution in the last decade of the students and in their values, their goals, their ideals, you know, really have changed a lot. So I know that, you know, you're working hard daily as well to keep up with the changing times. So
yeah.
Do you have any stories that kind of shed some light on why it's important that you and the Education Foundation of Sarasota County stay agile and responsive? And how do you do that?
Well, I think that when I think about being agile and responsive, I think that is because we're very committed to being student-centered. And as you just mentioned, students are very different. And so we have to always kind of modulate that and move so that we're meeting the student needs. And you are on point with seeing how students have changed so much. And we are seeing more of the struggles as we've even encouraged to have the student voice be more prevalent in our work. We in fact have students who are on our board. We do student focus groups all the time. And again, I never want to give the impression that we've hit the depth of satisfaction for us of being all-knowing, because we're definitely not. But we have seen the behavioral changes. We've seen the academic slides. We've seen the personal struggles. We've seen the rise of what even challenges social media has done. We have seen the fear that many students who may not come from stable homes or maybe first generation or even have emigrated to, or are immigrated rather to the United States, all of the different and unique challenges that each of those students have, and how important it is that we provide that personalized one-on-one trusting relationship and connections with them. So I think about a lot of different students, to be honest with you, and what I hear out of all those unique differences, I see a common thread that students, just like individuals in society today, at the end of the day, just want to know that they're accepted and that they matter as individuals. And so it's incumbent upon us, and I would say it's incumbent upon us as adults, not even necessarily as educators, but as adults, it's incumbent upon us to lend an ear, to be attentive to that, and in all ways demonstrate our love and encouragement to each and every child, no matter where they are. And that is the underpinnings of, if we really are student-centered, we will continue to be agile and responsive so that we're meeting their needs.
So it sounds like you really are walking the talk of that you really want to meet every student where they are.
Mm-hmm.
And you're really committed to that.
It is important that we are nimble so that those particularly who probably would benefit the most from our resources, that we're searching for them as opposed to waiting for them to find us. Because a lot of times, you know, you don't know what you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure how sometimes people will just come walking in the door because they're like, oh, you know, I need a plan for life. I haven't thought I, you know, where was I? Like, we're not naive enough to, you know, to fall under that trap that, or that, you know, myth that someone's just going to have this aha moment. But the more you're going out and you're doing those connections and touching upon them and you're provoking them to think about, all of that hopefully will build over time. But we've got to go out and we've got to find these kids.
Yeah. Well, and that's why it's great that you've continued your relationships with teachers and really, you know, focusing on them as well,
yeah.
You know, as well as the community. So, Jennifer, you know, I have a tremendous respect for your innovation and the way that you think, but I'm also really impressed by your enthusiasm and this drive to support students and teachers, like we just mentioned. So how do you remain optimistic, and how do you see that optimism driving you and the Education Foundation into the future?
Oh, that's a great question. Okay, so I remember years ago, someone saying to me when I was in a strategy session, and the person said to me, Jennifer, hope is not a strategy. Like, it is really important that you follow this plan. And I was early in my career at that time. So I was like, okay, all right. You know, and you know, I listened and followed along like a dubious, you know, naive student perhaps. And then as I've become older, maybe wiser, I don't know, but I've had more life experiences. And I actually would push back on that now, because now I see hope is a strategy. Hope gives you a glimmer. It gives you just a peek in the window, like the window is just barely open, but you can breathe through that tiny little crack, and that hope then fosters more hope. And I will take hope 10 times, 1,000 times over. I reject the notion of despair, and yet I recognize fully that people are in despair. And so if we can provide hope and crack that window and give them a breath, that's a good day. that's a good day. And sometimes that's all it takes. So that is definitely what drives me. I care deeply about just people in general. It is certainly my life's work to just see people live to their full potential. And I think we just live in a world, unfortunately, that just beats the, pardon the phrase, but we just beat the crap out of people left and right day after day with criticisms, with judgments, with condemnations. And that does not build unity. It does not build community. It does not build a thrivability. It does nothing but destroy. And so I just personally reject the notion of that even being acceptable.
I love that. That's awesome. You know, I mean, it's interesting because I'm accused of the same thing, you know, like having kind of, you know, too much hope sometimes. And I don't think there is such a thing, you know. I think that's important to be realistic about things. But, you know, it reminds me of when I was young and my parents were going through a divorce and I was really having a rough time, you know, in the beginning of college. And my humanities teacher came to me toward the end of the semester and he's like, right now you're getting a C in this class. You're not a C student. Mm. And he really encouraged me, you know, and said, I will help you. I'll do whatever you need. He had no idea that I was going through a lot personally at the time. And, you know, it made all the difference in the world. I took his class again the next semester, you know, the next phase of his class, made sure I still had him as a teacher. He worked with me over holiday break to get me caught up because I had missed some classes. And I got A's in his class, you know, the rest of the time. But that little bit of, you know, having somebody show me that they had hope for me, you know, and saw more in me and knew that I could thrive. And it just makes such a difference.
Well, I love that. And I know I'm guilty of not always. So I just to the listeners, I don't want to ever come across like I am preaching or anything like that, because a lot of times these are life lessons for myself. But I think we have to always be striving for the ideals and the values that we really care about. And that is just a constant reminder to myself.
And you never know what's going to touch somebody, you know, what gesture, you know, is going to touch. So,
exactly.
The vision of the Education Foundation, I know, is to unify the community to prepare, as you said, each and every student for life and for life readiness. And how do your partnerships and programs and even things like this podcast, how do they all play a role in that effort?
Yeah, so I guess I've said this before, but I certainly believe that good schools alone are not good enough. And it's not even dependent upon schools to do everything possible to help students to thrive. That is a team sport. It is a community challenge. And it's one that requires all the stakeholders to come together, because we each hold a valuable perspective as to why, going back to Simon Sinek's why it's so important we have that. And so for us, we recognize that our work can't be done in a silo. And so we aim to do all of our work through collaborative measures. And so one of the things I think we're, I want to say most proud of, but really feel very committed to, is when we began serving as the backbone organization for a collective impact model that we call Plan It Sarasota. And that means plan, like I'm planning for life, IT, Plan It Sarasota. And that's where we have come together, and our chief collaboration officer, Thomas Williams, leads that effort. He's just dynamite. He needs to be on this podcast one day, but he's amazing. And he leads that effort, but he does that as a player, as a coach, as a conductor. You have to play all these like multiple roles, but it's to help orchestrate a shared vision that now has over 50 partners in our community that is a part of this work. And the whole aim is to help improve our the working age adult population who holds a high quality certificate, post-secondary certificate, degree or diploma, because that's important to, you know, many, many factors. And so we want to get that to 60% by 2030. And so we come together, we have all these work groups and all this, you know, deeply embedded work that we're doing across the community with and through a multitude of partners, higher education partners, you know, Chamber of Commerce partners, youth serving organizations, the district, school district. I mean, there's just a multitude of different partners. The public libraries, we have to do this all together. And it's just so much fun because with each meeting and each time, you learn a little bit more about all the great work that's happening in this community and how if we just did it a little bit better together, how much further we would go.
Well, you know, we are so fortunate in this community to have you and the Education Foundation of Sarasota County and all of your partners and collaborators and your donors and supporters mm-hmm. of this organization. You know, you're doing fantastic work. This has been so much fun. Thank you again for inviting me to be a part of sharing your why.
Yeah, it's kind of fun to be on the opposite end.
It's different, right?
It sure is. But yeah, thank you so much, Lisa, for just taking the time to just share, you know, kind of to pull out and draw out from me a little bit more of the why. And I hope listeners, you all learned a little bit more about why we do this. And certainly, it's not about the Education Foundation of Sarasota County. It is about the work that we're doing and why we do it. And I really hope that that resonated with you all today. So thank you all so much for taking the time to listen in. And I certainly invite you to get involved with our work. And we care about our community and we certainly care about the next generation. And there's many, many ways that you can get involved in shaping the future for our community and for those wonderful, amazing kids. To learn more about us, our resources and programs and ways you can get involved, please visit www.edfoundationsrq.org. And we thank you so much for listening to today's podcast, and we ask that you please be sure to tune in to other episodes of Education Conversations. For now, this is Jennifer Vine signing off for the Education Foundation of Sarasota County.